Hi everybody, James Irsay here. This is your invitation to join me Friday mornings from 10 a.m. to noon for Morning Irsay. We listen to great historical performances of mainly, but not exclusively, classical music, with an emphasis on early scratchy piano recordings. And we also talk about them a lot. No need to dress up or even wash your face. Just sit around your home or office and enjoy 2 hours of diverting distraction as we broadcast great, hardly ever or even never heard performances of Golden Age musicians. Morning Irsay, Fridays 10 to noon on 99.5 WBAI and WBAI.org.
On Saturday, April 1st, the Aki Revolve Group invites you to the Citywide Housing Conference, which will take place at Metropolitan.
Good morning. This is Hour of the Wolf, a weekly program dedicated to science fiction, fantasy, enchantment, and, oh yeah, the imagination. That helps. My name is Jim Freund. We have a studio audience and a guest on Skype. It's going to be an exciting, hilarious morning. Stay tuned for instructions, because you are going to be a part of the show. I hope. and good morning. Okay, we have really, truly... That's nice microphone creak like that. It sounds like I do after just getting up. Okay. Never mind me, people. We have a really fun, exciting program for you this morning that involves interstate fiction, international, if the right people phone in, and all that. And actually, one of our main guest of the morning should now actually be on the air. Are you there, Noah?
I am.
Ooh, nifty how I actually figured out how to get you on Skype without putting you on the air, which means we still can't speak to each other, but we're safe in having you there without my accidentally broadcasting you, which, by the way, I almost did, but what of that?
Am I on now?
You are. You're actually on the radio as we speak. So you should turn your internet guide off. But Noah, introduce yourself to the nice people out there, Noah.
Hello, hello. My name is Noah Beit Aharon. I publish under the name N.S. Dolkart.
Spell Beit Aharon for those.
Beit Aharon in English is spelled B-E-I-T hyphen A-H-A-R-O-N.
Okay, very good. I can never get that Semitic aspiration, whether it is for Arabic people or for Jewish people. I can do the Hebraic people. I can do the ch, like in Hanukkah. But when I talk to my friend, it's Barbara Nimri Aziz here at WBAI, who talks to me about my friend Saladin Ahmed. And when I tried to say Ahmed, I think I just did it right for a change. I usually never get that aspiration correct.
Oh, yeah.
Also, we have, by way of support, a studio audience. So would you folks like to introduce yourselves?
Hi, I'm Danielle Friedman. I am a science fiction writer. And
Now you admit it.
Well, yeah.
When last you were on the show, you not only admitted it, you blew me away with a great short story.
That's very kind of you.
I loved it.
Thank you. Longtime friend of Noah Beit Aharon.
And I'm Havilah McGinnis. I am a writer and a voice actress, and a recent but fervent friend of Danielle Friedman's.
There you go.
And game developer.
And game developer.
All friends of Danielle Friedman are fervent friends, regardless of how recent.
Yeah. I think that's a safe thing to say, although she is such a wonderful personality and all that sometimes I know I'm getting on the wrong side and cringe, because I know that if she and I have a disagreement, I know I'm wrong. But that doesn't change my opinion, which is like just like a man. Yeah, exactly.
I really hope that Danielle just captures that and plays that back to you every time you argue in the future.
Oops, I wonder if I can...
I'm wrong, but...
Yes. Now, I am going to go shortly into a pitch for an event coming up this Saturday. But before I do that, give people a chance to get ready for our game show, which we hope to begin at 1:30 Eastern Daylight Time here in New York. And hopefully we have at least one listener in Bulgaria. I'm not exaggerating. And people.
Shout out to Bulgaria.
Yeah, absolutely, yes. Bobson.
You're not exaggerating the Bulgaria, or you're not exaggerating the one.
I'm not.
To be a third of a person.
Both are accurate. No, a fellow by the name of Bobson, who is a regular listener and writer. I should say writer into the show, very often calls in via Skype, and he sends me text messages often during the show, generally correcting things I have to say, but he's not an exclusive company. There are many people find many things to correct about what I say, Danielle chief among them, but she doesn't text me about them. She just well, corrects me.
This story is going to keep them up all night.
Well, why don't we explain what it is we are... I am enjoying the vocabulary of the flower. Okay. What the bleep does that mean? Of the flower... Of the flower child before you. Oh, and you said that 22 minutes ago. Okay, before you're even on the air. He texted me.
Oh, okay. That's important context.
Yes, yes.
I was confused there. I didn't remember writing anything about a flower with vocabulary, and I've written some pretty lousy things.
Yeah. A little closer into the mic. Okay. Bring the mic closer to you. You don't have to get closer to it.
Are you speaking to me or to Danielle?
Danielle.
Oh, okay.
Actually, your voice, Noah, is fine.
Excellent.
Mine is not.
And yours, Havila, being a voice actress.
I was about to say, if I screw this up, then I apologize to everyone who's trained me.
Well, really. And we're going to have to talk about that because I'm a voice producer. So we have to talk about that. A wannabe. No, I've got 3 audiobooks out now.
Nice. Ooh. Are you going to tell us the names of those audiobooks?
Well, the one that is me is called Chatting Science Fiction, which is a collection of interviews from this very same radio show.
Excellent.
That came out last August from Skyboat Media, the people for whom I do a lot of editing work. But I produced my very first audiobook about a year and a half ago. How horribly embarrassing. Called Elysium by Jennifer Marie Brissett, who is a great, relatively new voice in science fiction. I had her on the air before she had published a single story along with a fellow named Sam J. Miller before he had published a single story.
Those are both extremely brilliant writers.
They really are, both of them.
Shockingly brilliant.
Yeah. They'd both be well-published and well-known and celebrated without me, but I got there first, so so I can claim happiness about that. So my very first audiobook was Elysium, and Chatting Science Fiction was my second. My third is only going into production now, so I can't discuss it. We discussed it over drinks before we came here, but let's say it's a little bit weird or strange or queer or something like that. Sorry.
I ought to say, we have a fourth member now of the studio audience.
Ooh!
My lovely wife, Becky, has just awoken from her slumber and come to join us.
Hi, Becky.
Hello, Becky.
Hi, Becky. We're all on Eastern Daylight Time.
She has a bit of a cold, so I don't know if she'll be... Have some... So she may or may not be reading, but she will certainly be enjoying.
We do have a house doctor, but she's in New York.
Yes.
I'm not working tonight, Jim.
Yeah.
No, we should definitely diagnose this right now.
One time
I
had Dr. Friedman over at my house for a dinner one night, and I burned myself on the oven for a second, and I was just yelp. Whether I'm actually harmed or not, it's just an automatic reaction, more warning myself from myself than anything else. And she said from the other room, I'm not working tonight, Jim. It took me a while to figure out what she was referring to. But that was just my way of cavelling.
It's usually a warning.
Oh, dear. Yes.
Be careful, because I'm not going to intervene.
If you get yourself into trouble, you can dial a phone number of 3 digits.
I would dial a phone number for you.
Yeah.
Now, that's true friendship.
That I appreciate. That I do, in fact, appreciate. Because you could tell them what an idiot I was. Anyway, Noah, before we begin, would you be so kind as to tell the listeners what it is we will be embarking upon in a little while and what they need to do to prep, although they shouldn't over prep. The three of us here have purposely not read too far into your story.
Excellent. Yeah, exactly.
Because if we were prepared, that would sort of take away half the fun, more than half.
Well, yes, I must say, I am, for all that I wrote this, I am terrible at this game. So no amount of preparation on my part will prepare me for it.
Who's the judge?
We shall see.
Rebecca?
In any case, let me explain what the game is. This is actually a game with an old, storied history, as it were. But I first learned of it from the context of the story called The Eye of Argon, which is an infamous fantasy story.
I will not say on the air who wrote it, but I know who did.
Yes. In any case, the idea is you take a piece of outrageously terrible prose and you read it aloud. And if you find yourself either breaking into uncontrollable laughter or
even controlled laughter.
Or even controlled laughter.
Too long, yeah.
Or accidentally correcting the text, then your turn is over, and it's the next person's turn, and they pick up the ball and run with it.
Okay, I have a question about the rules here.
Sure.
Typos or intentional typos. For example, what if one were to come across a word that appeared to be terfifically?
Then you ought to read it terfifically.
Ah! I know. I am a terfific reader on the air. I've been doing it for years. So I've got no problem. Okay. So that is not... okay. So, in other words, typos are to be read.
Yes, typos are to be read as written.
Typos, yeah.
What about homophones?
Homophones, you can get away. As long as it sounds right, you're fine.
At WBAI, we object to homophones. I'm sorry, I have a cold. Sorry, go on.
That was the extent of my question.
Oh, okay, what about homophones?
So,
homophones. Those are phones that only one type of person can use, by the way, in case people didn't know.
Yeah, so, well, as long as it sounds the way it's more or less spelled, you know, keeping in mind that English generally does not sound the way it's spelled, but, you know, within reason, you're good.
Can you break and point out that it is the incorrect spelling?
Yes, if you so desire, as long as you don't break out in laughter. If you feel like saying, yes, indeed, that says terfifically rather than terrifically, now moving on, then you may do that.
And if you say here spelled H-E-A-R?
Yes, you may do that.
Okay.
If you choose to do so, but you will not be penalized for simply reading the word here.
I would put in what the British called inverted commas around such a thing. Exactly. That means sort of in quotes or italics. I just came across the term inverted commas recently, and I've fallen in love with it.
I've also heard the term scare quotes.
Ooh.
That's the what you do with your
the wigglies.
Yeah.
With your hands, yeah.
Your finger wigglies.
Yeah, your finger wigglies.
So radio audience, just know that we're going to be doing a ton of air quotes that if you could see them, they'd impress you.
Yes. As opposed to WBAI air quotes, which are usually like, did you hear what they said on that show?
So Danielle is an expert in wiggly fingers, as I've learned through harsh experience.
We are, yes. And I hope that all of you watching the radio understand that this refers to sort of like a move resembling an Arabic dancer or something like that, as opposed to anything your naughty little mind.
No, I think we should keep that quote far out of context.
Yes, very much so.
Thank you, Noah, for ruining my reputation among serious colleagues of mine.
Okay, so if people wish to call in and participate in this game show, Noah?
Well,
alias, Mac Pen name. Well,
they ought to call in.
Well, they ought to call in. They ought to call in at 347-335-0818. But I'm not as interested in promoting that phone number yet as I am in informing people where they can find the text that they would read.
Yes, yes indeed. It can be found in a number of places, but the easiest way to find it that goes through my website is at nsdolcart.wordpress.com, and then there will be a header that you can choose called Bad Prose. It's third from the left.
Well, Noah, is there anything else on the website that people might be interested in seeing, for example, that might be coming out soon?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, but those would be among the fallen.
This coming Tuesday, I have my second novel coming out. Woo! It is called Among the Fallen, and it is the sequel to last June's Silent Hall.
Nice. Which was very good.
Yes, it was. I have begun Among the Fallen. I have not read through it because I have so much required reading that one must do for this radio program. So again, that's nsdolkart.wordpress.com, and then follow the links to Bad Prose.
Dun dun dun.
Exactly. As opposed to Bad Fans or Bad Prose, but
Or follow the link to Among the Fallen and pre-order it.
Yeah, or go to WBA.
Yes,
there's that. Or go to WBAI.org, and there you will see on the air currently Hour of the Wolf, and there you will see a link to the short story that we can't say we are about to mangle because it comes to us
pre-mangled.
Exactly. That's exactly the words I was about to invoke.
It's really nice that you can just get your text pre-mangled these days instead of having to deal with the hassle of cooking it up yourself.
It's the internet age. Text and grammar are pre-mangled.
It's the puree diet of mangled prose.
So before we begin between our studio audience and our listening audience, I gotta promote!
Oh, and when you're done promoting, I ought to promote something as well. Just the book.
You go first.
Oh, all right. Well, I ought to mention, seeing as here I am promoting my second book, which comes out on Tuesday, that on Thursday...
And it's called Among the Fallen.
Yes, but on Thursday, April 13th, if you do so happen as to be in New York City, you can come on down to Blue Stockings Bookstore and meet me in person and get a signed copy.
And take revenge for the story you are about to hear.
Yes.
Get it autographed.
Or take revenge for the story you are about to hear. That's another option.
Strenuously, I will be there as a bodyguard.
Excellent.
Yeah, is anybody recording that, Noah? My voice is gone. Jeez. The pub we were in is a little loud.
Is anybody recording which?
Your event at Blue Stockings a week from Tuesday. At what time was it?
I believe at 7 o'clock.
7 o'clock. So
no. I'm sorry. It's not a week from Tuesday. It should be a week from Thursday.
Oh, sorry. A week.
It's from
Thursday.
It's April 13th.
It's on Friday the 13th, falling on a Thursday.
Yes.
Okay.
I'm sorry. What?
Those are the best Friday the 13th.
It is Thursday the 13th.
No, nobody remembers Walt Kelly. Nobody remembers Pogo, in which every single month. It would be, Friday the 13th falls on a Thursday this month, or Friday the 13th falls on a Sunday. And when Friday the 13th actually fell on a Friday, the comic strip went ape.
I would like to point out that I do know Pogo.
Ooh.
Just for the record.
Very good. Very good. Are you a fan?
The stick or the cartoon?
I was just about to say.
Those who know Pogo cannot help but be fans. There was a failed TV version, and even that had Bob and Ray doing the voices. So even that was mitigated. And Faith Hubley did the animation. So So while I didn't appreciate the idea of an animated version of Pogo, although God help us, the way things are going, they'll probably be a live action version.
Oh, God.
Yeah, right? Well, what isn't? I mean, they're doing a live action Lion King.
You know what isn't? Pogo.
Let's all bite our tongues and shut our ears off to the possibility and encourage people to go and read Pogo, which is once again in print.
And that was Jim's promo, so let's move on to our story.
No, my promo is a very, very, very cool one. And it starts with a Jim cavilling about his past story. I began volunteering at WBAI, Lord help me, in 1967 at age 13. And at that time, there was a fellow here producing a radio drama. Our drama and literature director was Baird Searles, who worked for the magazine of fantasy and science fiction and Galaxy magazine as well. And also Theodore Sturgeon and Thomas M. Dish and a script girl named Joanna Russ, who, for those who don't know the name, you should know the name. Brilliant, brilliant writer, very, very feminist. So having the title script girl was sort of like, but Samuel R. Delaney was producing a radio drama of a Nebula Award-winning novella called The Star Pit. And I single-handedly made that production happen because who else was going to fetch the coffee? You know, if you don't have somebody fetching the coffee, fetching the water, and rolling the... Well, anyway, doing all of the various and sundry tasks that the people who were responsible for it were, if you don't have somebody doing that, how's it going to happen? Delaney did this incredible radio drama, and so I met him. I was 13. He would have been 25. And we've known each other since. He worked at the radio station until about 1970 when Baird Searles left. And he was already one of the great writers of science fiction with novels like The Ballad of Beta 2, Babel 17, The Einstein Intersection was his first novel. I am not looking at any notes. I just know all this. In 1975, he came out with a book that may very, very well... I dare say will be studied in 100, 200 years from now because it is that good. It has been compared by people who hate science fiction as being on a par with Thomas Pynchon. And by people who love science fiction, they say, Dahlgren isn't science fiction. Dahlgren is about this and that and the other thing. Dahlgren is one of the great science fiction books ever written, bar none, period. Okay? And Samuel R. Delaney, Chip Delaney, is one of the neatest people. He was born on April 1st, some years ago. How many years ago? 75. This Saturday, April 1st, will be Samuel R. Delaney's 75th birthday. And the New York Review of Science Fiction will be proud as I can possibly be and smug to have the honor of having Delaney's birthday party here on the ground floor where WBAI is at 388 Atlantic Avenue. And you are all invited to attend. Admission is free. Donations to the New York Review of Science Fiction readings are not only suggested, but we will look at you dolefully. No, I take that back. Nobody will be turned away for lack of funds. That's it. That's the statement. If you don't have any money, come anyway. You don't want to spend money here, bring a sandwich. However you want to do it, just be here. Because it's going to be a great time and a lot of fun. And what it will consist of is me saying the words you just heard. And then Terrence Taylor, an often guest to this program, pulled a non-intentional stunt a year ago On his way up to ReaderCon, when it was the 40th anniversary of the novel Dahlgren, on the way to ReaderCon, Terrence read the book Dahlgren. That's okay. It's not a problem. It's only 800 and something pages, a very difficult circular text where the beginning or the first line is the ending of the last line of the novel. And after that, it gets complicated. For I have come
But no
to,
spoilers.
No, there are no spoilers because when something is that circular, there's really, you know, what can you do? The last line of the novel is, for I have come to, and then the first line of the novel is, wound the autumnal city. The whole sentence is, for I have come to wound the autumnal city. Great sense of prose. But besides that, the novel and the things that it evokes are amazing. And the person who put that so well, Terrence wrote this essay en route to ReaderCon and spoke it out loud extemporaneously at a panel with Delaney sitting in the front row. That must be so frightening, right? You know, and Chip has this thing about, you know, sort of, what is it I'm doing, Danielle?
He is stroking his beard.
Stroking his beard, exactly. Very ponderously and listening to Terrence. And after that, it was published in Lightspeed magazine and has been republished. And Chip said to me, oh, that was very eloquent, wasn't it? So after my intro, Terrence Taylor, who will be neglecting his duties as our video engineer, but I'm going to fill in for him at that point for those 10 minutes. He's going to do that essay. Then I'm going to interview Chip, or rather he and I are going to chat together. And then he is going to read, then we're going to intermish. And then Chip will read a brand new, yet unpublished short story, which will be in the pages of the magazine of fantasy and science fiction. And then party! Okay, with photo opportunity in there, I should mention. I'm so pleased. I am so proud to be able to do this. This is this coming Saturday evening, 7 p.m., 388 Atlantic Avenue, free admission, donations accepted. Show up at 6:30 because we're hoping it will be crowded, and by my saying these words, we're hoping it will be now even more crowded. If for some bizarre, horrible reason you cannot show up in person, you can go to livestream.com, and just search on the name Delaney, Delaney, and you can watch surreptitiously. But if you're in the New York area, you ought to show up. Okay.
And Bobson in Bulgaria, if you show up, I will buy you a drink.
Oh, yes. Absolutely. We will all buy you a drink. You won't be able to get on the flight back home, actually. Mm-hmm. Is Bulgaria prescribed yet? No. Okay. They're affiliated with Russia. It's perfectly okay. So, it's true. Okay. I've done my promo, Noah.
All right. In that case, if we're all ready for some bad prose.
So who is adjudicating this? Who decides, who does the Chuck Barris here? The recently late Chuck Barris.
In the past, we've done it very democratically, where someone will point out, hey, now, that was a laugh, and then people will say, oh, all right, and move on. But if you so desire, you may have the speaker's gavel.
No. I think democratically works. I will give the phone number out once more, 347-335-0818. How they imagine that we on the air will memorize that phone number, I have no idea. But I remember phone numbers from, the 60s that we had.
Is there an easy place to find it online if our listeners have forgotten and want
No, they have the pledge number, you know, how to contribute to WBAI. You can get that. You can, and, well, all that, but no, 347-335-0818 is the singular phone number, which you can, if you're long distance, Skype into. You can join in. But we in the studio are going to start. We're going to begin before the listening audience gets an opportunity. Shall we go clockwise?
Well, I don't know where I belong on this clock, but
you sound like a 5 o'clock kind of guy.
You're,
I've got my 5 o'clock shadow.
You're the author. Are you allowed?
Oh, well, I'm pretty terrible at this, so I will happily join in.
I can actually vouch for this. I have seen him attempt to read this before, and he will not be any kind of detriment to this.
Okay, so
I am the kind of person who laughs at a misplaced comma.
Okay, so Noah, why don't you read the work entitled The Maltese Pelican by Alias MacPen Name?
Very good. The Maltese Pelican by Alias MacPen Name. He found gin and tonics terrifically refreshing. He loved the quiet intensity of lime mixed so casually with equal portions of gin and orange soda. He'd tried gin with other tonics too, but they weren't so good, and he didn't like to get involved in the Coke versus Pepsi wars. Carlotte's eyes shimmered with anticipation. See, this is how bad I am. But my wife is here to pick up the slack, so Becky, would you like to read?
I can vouch for the fact that he was really having a focused look there.
Right at the top.
Carlotte's eyes shimmered with anticipation as his shaking fingertips neared ever closer to the beakers holding the most perfect conglomeration of orange soda and 4 shots of gin. He cried out as the two liquids amalgamated. A perfect confederation.
A perfect confederation. All right, somebody else's turn.
Hobble, would you like to... I know you're holding it in. Would you like to give a quick comment?
I'm just... I can handle a lot of things, but orange soda is not a type of tonic, and I will stab anyone who says otherwise.
Okay, so...
But I'm really a nice, friendly person.
So we have a barista in our midst. I should point out I was a professional once. Many, many, many years ago. In the 70s, at the Rainbow Room, no less.
Nice. That's a good place to be professional.
It was. I was trained how to tend bar by Vic Damone. True story. Ooh. For those who know who Vic Damone is.
Okay. Who's
Javila, are you taking it up or shall I?
Yes, I can take up this abomination on the good name of booze.
It was good gin.
Yeah, that is true. A perfect confederation of flavors, this would surely be. When he tasted it, he slimed. What a delicious gin and tonic! Fredline would be in at 7. Suddenly, the heavy oak glass window topped door to his office burst open, soaring like an eagle in bloom. Aha! Shouted Maurice Sendak, who was not the author, but rather the janitor of the office building, whose name was a complete coincidence.
That sounded like a laugh.
Okay, yeah, okay. You're me, Danielle.
I'll try it. I'm never good at these things anyway. Okay, do I try the phrase?
You can start from whose name was a complete coincidence.
Okay. Who was not the author, but rather the janitor of the office building, whose name was a complete coincidence. Drinking so early again, colon, are we, Carlotte? Good, Lord Maurice. I'm done.
I'm telling you, a misplaced comma can do a lot of good.
Okay, and by the way, Danielle, point the mic a little closer to your face when next your turn comes,
oh, dear
because
Lord.
You have forfeited.
A quick question for the author. So when he says, are we Carlotte, we calling people a harlot incorrectly, or are we referring to our parking space?
No, well, our hero's name is Carlot, oddly enough.
Oh, so he's just trying to call him by name and failing.
It's not uppercase, so it's hard to tell.
Absolutely.
Something for the listeners there.
Well, and our hero will frequently change names accidentally as time goes by.
Thanks
so.
For the spoiler.
I've had those Noah. Days.
Don't get too attached.
Spoilers.
Is it me now?
It is you.
Yeah, I will tell people, by the way, of the three of us here, none of us have studied this text, including myself. So we're not cheating. Good, Lord Maurice, shrieked the private detective, spilling the liquid beverage all over his outlandishly white suit. Haven't I told you like a million times not to burst in through the door and yell at me until my office hours at least? Oh, right, sorry, said Maurice Sendak, falling to his misshapen knees. But anyway, why are you here so early in the a.m. drinking alone? That's none of my business and all of yours, said the Carlot mysteriously. Did Fred Lean put you up to this? Asked the hunchback custodian of the building. Carlotta glared down at his tarnished suit, now a tie-dyed creamsicle of despair. He would have to send Fred Lean to the dry cleaners, since they wouldn't take him because of his drinking problem. Anywho, I'll be off now, said Maurice Sendak, the 80-year-old diseased janitor. But before I become one of your murder investigations, har, har, har! He was about to drag his sorry ass out of there when Fred Lean arrived at the door, wearing nothing but a raincoat, rain boots, impeccably tailored pantsuit, white blouse, beige underclothes, and argyle socks. So, you're here already, she pronounced, drinking in the AM as usual. And how about you, Maurice Sendak? Shouldn't you be out cleaning something? Jerk off! She assailed the deceased janitor, who scowled and jerked off to some other office, fearsomely intimidated by her icy glare. I'm glad you came so promptly, badumch, enthused Mr. Carlot. Now, tell me, and tell me straight, has anyone been done away with to sleep with the fishes in the aquarium this afternoon? Nobody tells me anything. Fridling mourned. They all know I work for the best private investigator in the whole San Francisco Bay State County area. She smiled, dazzling at him like some foxy flaxen-haired brunette from like a movie about gangsters who spent all their time shouting pool and kissing dames. We'll get it on, see? Entice the renowned.
Get on it.
Get on it.
Oh! Erp.
Oh.
Oop, 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 okay. Okay.
I have to say,
I'll have to get off it.
I thought this was supposed to be bad prose, but tie-dyed creamsicle of despair is my favorite descriptor of anything ever.
Actually, I've worn such things.
You have my wife to thank for that one. Early on when I was writing this, she said, no, put in tie-dyed creamsicle of despair. And I was like, okay.
Thank or blame.
I will not argue with that.
If I had a hat, I would doff it for her.
And okay. You all know how painful that can be. It is.
Okay.
Well, I think you're up to,
get on it, see. Enticed the renowned private's investigator. If we don't solve any murders today, it won't be long till we run out of the green and things get rough, see? Mm. Okay, Buster, snapped Fred Lean, talking faster than a speeding bully. You hold it right there. I've got a 12-gauge under this blouse, and it's... sorry, that's the end of me. Okay, Becky, here we go, under this blouse.
I could see him swallowing some laughs there before he started laughing. I've got a 12-gauge under this blouse, and it's pointed right at your fat, chiseled face, so make one false move, and I'll blow you to the Magic Kingdom, come! Rats, cried Detective Carlot, his heart beating like a snare drum on fire. So you were working for the wrong side this whole time, eh, Baby Jane? Who owns you, the Baldacci's? You'll never know, fool, cried she, her face adulterated with outrage. Now get in your car and we'll drive to the Pierre.
Okay, that's the end of that turn. I think we're up to Danielle.
Oh, no.
Okay, before Danielle begins her turn, that it's time to also invite listeners.
Yes, indeed.
To join in. If you care to partake of this...
monstrosity?
Wholesome prose. If you care to ejaculate some of this prose on the air,
I always feel this is like one of those cooking shows where everything goes wrong, and so they're just like, oh, it's a deconstructed prose.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. You can call in at area code 347-335-0818, and after whoever next should blunder, or rather properly ridicule the material... we will put you on the air, and it will be your turn. So again, 347-335-0818. Danielle.
Oh, dear. Okay. You'll never know, fool, cried she, her face adulterated with outrage. Now get in your car and we'll drive to the pier. You're the one who will be snoozing with the fishes in the aquarium tonight. Chapter 2! Exclamation point, exclamation point, exclamation point. Private Dick Boris Carlot drove the beat black Buick to the waterfront. Park over there, trilled his sexual companion.
Okay. And on that note, I think it's time to take a listener call.
Hooray!
Okay, let's give this
Save
a whirl.
Me.
Good morning, you're on the air. Hello.
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 Hi there. You're on the air.
Hello.
You can speak now. We're on delay, so turn off your radio.
Chapter 2. Private Dick Boris Carlot drove the beat black Buick to the waterfront. Park over there, trilled his sexual companion. He skidded quaintly over the rough gravel until his taillight reached the dock with a most impeccable shatter. Darn it, he responded. I can't parallel park. I never learned how. Good damn, cried the slavish mistress of the mafia. Just get out and I'll park it. They jumped out of the car and switched sides, but whilst the foxy mafiosa was passing by him, the private dick reached out and grabbed her blouse, slipping underneath before she could discharge her whip. Ha-ha! He ejaculated, pulling out the weapon. So the tablets have turned. Hands up, Fredline, or I'll blow you away. Ah, blow yourself, she spat, placing her hands on her curvaceous lips. You've tricked me, Carlot, but you'll never catch me alive. So she sprang into the river. Rats! Yelled the flummoxed Carlot as he gazed into the gigantic pool that was the Pacific Ocean. How will I ever find out who paved off my secretary now? He interrogated the inconvenient water. Suddenly, a dark black van came inching along behind him, making gravel-crunching sounds with its big black tires. What's this? Wondered Boris Carlot, the primate detective, as he ducked laconically behind his old Chevy Buick. Then... six bad guys dressed as blackly as their car jumped out of the van. I don't think I could take them all down, thought Doris. I'll have to see what they want. Come out of there. With your hands up, screamed one of the bad guys. We've got gats and the guts to use them, so you'd better just surrender, Carlot. Okay, fine. I'm unarmed, said the unhappy Dick as he dropped Fredline's Uzi into the frothing ocean and stood up, his hands floating skyward. Great, the other man enthused, glouting like a school. Tie him up, Tony! The one who carried the eponym Tony flounced furiously forward and bound Carlot's wrist behind his aching back with an extension cord. He couldn't get away. Very good, Tony, espoused the lever. Now shove him in the van and jerk off to make sure there are no witnesses. If anyone knows, we've got Doris here. They might tail us home. Okay, said Tony, when he went looking for onlookers. You'll never get away with this, cried Carlot dispassionately. Oh, yeah? Said the mysterious leader of the black-clad thugs. The cops will never find you. You've got the best private eyes in this whole crooked town, and you don't even know who I am? Your pitiful plight is unequivocally hopeless. A shot rang out across the docks, making the whole place echo like a cave that's had a gun go off inside it. Boris Karloff nearly fainted, but he kept his feet because he was made of strong stuff. Tony, remarked Boris' nemesis. Was that you dispatching a witness? Yeah. Tony, it was me. The followers no more, so we can go now. What do you want out of me, Buster? Inquired Boris. I'm no fool, see? So spill the garbanzo beans. If you wanted me dead, you'd have been topped off by now. What's your game, see? Oh, you'll find out soon enough, charcoal to Gaptor. I have all kinds of plans for you. Then another shot rang out. Tony, another witness, rated his superior. No, Jack, sorry. It was an accidental discharge. The embarrassed Tony snook his head. Ha-ha! Carlot thought loudly. So the leader's name is Jack. That must be Jack Baldacci, my mysterious nemesis. Very clever, Harlot, smiled Jack. But fearless powers of deduction won't save you this time. Now get in the van before I blow you wide open. Carlot conceded and slouched into the car. Hope was never lost until he was dead, and he didn't want Jack to blow him now. The darkly dressed mafiosos all jumped in after him, and they blindflotted him with an old rag. This is so you don't know how to get to our HQ, said Tony Morrison. Carslot recognized him now as the Baldacci's notorious hint man. Then he put a bottle of chlorophyll up Carlot's nose into a deep, dark sleep.
Okay,
that was excellent.
That was excellent. I think what we are going to do is keep you on the phone because outside of a dropped word, you were flawless, and I think you're, you know, one to nothing, 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 nothing. And are you willing to stay on the phone, and we'll bring you back as we go another round?
Sure, this is fun.
Okay, good. So,
what's your name, caller?
John.
Excellent.
John, our mysterious caller.
Okay, very, very good, John. So you stay on the line, and we're going to revolve, as it were, you're now a part of the crew. Okay?
Swell.
Okay, swell, John. So stay there, and whose turn is it next? I think it's Avila.
It's time. All right, I can do this. I can stay focused.
I believe in you.
Another chapter! Carlot reawakened from drowsy slumber in a room he couldn't possibly have recognized. It was pitch black. He sat up, still punching the sleep from his eyes. There were some beautiful paintings in this room, but he couldn't see any of them yet on account of the darkness. He stood up, bumbling for the light switch. He flipped the witch! Then he could finally see this room he was in. As I said, there were many beautiful paintings hung over on the wall. They were of like a bird and a plane and a still life and a Rembrandt. The Rembrandt had a peephole in one of his.
Sorry, that was a Rembrandt.
It's a Rembrandt.
Oh, no, it was!
Yes. I Rembrandted well.
Yes. Unintentional correction.
It's almost like I wanted to try to make it good.
That's a foolish, foolish goal.
Is it me now?
It must be.
Yes, it is.
Oh, dear. Okay.
The Rembrandt.
The Rembrandt had a peephole in one of his eyes, but he couldn't see any of that from across the room because the peehole was very small and subtle, not one of those real noticeable ones where both eyes slide out and get replaced by the peeper's eyes. He was wearing an old-fashioned hat and a wooden double Dutch shoes, and he was baking cornbread in a Dutch oven. He was riding on a noble steed overlooking the French Riviera near his hometown, smiling an enigmatic grin, and brandishing a ginormous sword. We're talking about the Rembrandt here, not Carlot. Carlot was just standing there. Carlot did wish he had that sword, though. Here he was, totally trapped. He tried to open the door, but it was locked because the gangsters weren't total idiots, except for Tony Morrison. He had an IQ of 258, but it didn't do him any good. He was still an idiot. The door bust open and Jack Baldacci entered the room holding a 12-gauge pistol in one hand and a copy of The Bible in the other. He shoved The Bible into Carlotte's hands and said, "Okay, car park, square on this Bible and you'll tell me the truth or I'll blow you." "That's rich," guffawed the private dick. "What kind of an info dump do you think you'll get out of me? I got questions for you here, see? But if you want me to say something, I won't talk. You'd better just unload here on the chair, because that gat won't do you any good." Jack didn't take too kindly to that. Oh, no, he didn't. He whipped the private dick in the face and spat, "You'll talk all right, even if I have to beat it off you." Doris wiped the blood off his lip and scowled, but he had to solemnly admit, "All right, Jack, what do you want to know?" "What's your secretary been up to? Hey, where is she? We'll catch her anyway, mind you, but if you help us find her, maybe we'll go easy on you instead of pumping you full of lead like a goddamn thermometer." "Watch your language, Carlotte," said Carlotte. "There are ladies present." "What ladies?" aspirated Jack, looking around. "I don't see no ladies." "Behind you," said Carlos. And when Jack turned, he clobbered him over the head with the Bible and grabbed his gat from his outstretched hand. "Hands up, Jack," he cried, "or I'll blow you full of holes with this Colt or this Smith and Wesson or whatever the hell kind of gun this is." "It's a Glock," said Jack anachronistically. "Or was it?" "I got it in the army, just like you did." Carla turned white as a sheet of bright white printer paper, not one of those cream-colored sissy stationery papers or even a classy ivory. No, he was bright white. "I don't know what you're talking about," he choked. "I was never in the army." "Not the American army," grimmed Jack, baring his pearly whites. "No, Boris, I know all about you and military history." "No," cried Boris. "I don't believe it." "Believe what you like," said Jack Baldacci, the master criminal. "I know all about it. We looked you up, Carplot. Seems like you used to be in the Russian army until you defecated." "No! No!" said Carpet, covering his ears. "I was never in the army!" "You're a Soviet defecator," hissed the villain. "That's why they cleared your immigration papers so fast. I bet you sold Uncle Sam some sweet Soviet secrets for that green card, didn't you?" Boris shot his mouth off. Jack stared at him for a minute, then turned and ran out the door. He had to find a band-aid to stop the bleeding. Carlotte watched him go. "This is a dirty town," he muttered. "A damn dirty town." He stood there, peppering to escape, little knowing that behind the remembrane larped a villain even more deviant than Jack Baldacci, a man who was, in fact, the Brian behind the whole criminal enterprise. This shadowy mastermind saw Camelot standing there with the clock and chuckled to himself in a most sinister manner. "Yes," he thought misogynistically, "everything is going to plan."
I didn't hear the accordion there.
Oh, gosh.
So, should I continue the flashback, or shall we... this is like Passover, isn't it? This is like the telling.
Why on this night do we read the bad prose when on most nights we try to read something good?
Exactly.
Okay, well, I'll take the flashback.
And by the way, why do mountains skip like rams? But let's not go there.
Something pretty good when they wrote that.
Yeah, oh yeah, they really were. That Haggadah is pretty flipped out. But Let me just say, by the way, of being pretty flipped out, that you're tuned to listener-sponsored non-commercial Pacifica Radio in New York City, WBAI at 99.5 FM. Okay.
Okay. I guess I'll take the flashback, because even though it's short, I'm not going to make it all the way to the end of it.
I believe in you.
Flashback! It was 1943, and the Red Army was invading West Germany. men were dying like barflies, Nazis and straight allies alike. A stench rose above the battlefield, the stench of so many bodies not decaying yet, because they were mostly still alive. Battle had yet to be joined. The Russian commander blew the charge, and his side crashed toward the enemy. A heavy armor platoon sank its teeth into the German lines, chewing up soldiers as if they were fried calamari with dipping sauce. The dipping sauce was blood. D-Day hadn't happened yet, by the way. It was still 1943. End of flashback, and a new chapter starts now! Boris stood in the room of his imprisonment, breasts heaving. Oh, that's the end of me. Here comes Becky.
Yeah, here comes Becky and Boris. Okay.
Becky, please help us with our heaving breasts.
Okay, I will try sincerely. And then after me, is it the readers?
I think it's Danielle.
Jack
and then,
is still on the phone.
Where do we insert our new reader here?
Yes.
I think he's... Oh, maybe he's right after Danielle?
Okay.
That's what I remember.
All right. Boris stood in the room of his imprisonment, breasts heaving with excitement as he contemplated escaping at last from his cruel
I'm
captors.
I'm sorry, he contemplated escaping.
Okay. Danielle,
oh, really?
it's now upon you.
All right. Boris stood in the room of his imprisonment, breasts heaving with excitement as he contemplated escaping at last from his cruel captors, unaware that he was being spied upon by a fiend who was at that very moment dividing a plot to bring him down for good, him being Boris, that is. The aforementioned Boris ran out the door, shooting mildly at anyone who got in his way. He twisted and churned through the compound, ruining as fast as he could. At last, he burst from the belly of the beast, lunging into a getaway car that was parked nearby. With one hand still holding the gum, he threw the car into neutral.
I think it's John's
turn,
yeah.
Just a chuckle. He didn't break out.
Did I? Okay. Does that count?
Oh, fair enough. Go continue. Why
Can
not?
Can I continue? I was so proud of myself.
No, keep going.
You're doing great.
Okay. Sorry. With one hand still holding the gum, he threw the car into neutral and pumped the gas as fast as he could, with no result. Calm down, he told himself. You'll get through this if you just breathe. But he was wrong. It would take a lot more than just breathing to get through this. Other than breathing, he also had to put the car in reverse, place his elbow on the seat in back of him to get a really good look out that rear window, hit the gas a little, turn the wheel, hit the brake, turn his body forward again, put the car in drive, and hit the gas again while steering the car out of the parking lot and away from the Baldacci's hideout. It was a lot of work. When he had finished the exhausting and complicated task, Monsieur Carlotte found himself inexplicably on the freeway. I guess I shouldn't be surprised, he said to himself. You can't go anywhere around here without hitting the gobam of a freeway. A few minutes of labor. Oh, goodness, a few minutes labor. That's me.
Yeah.
That's it for me.
And there's certainly a double. Excellent. There's certainly a double entendre in a few minutes of labor.
I guess. No, it's a few minutes
John,
later.
Sir. John, are you still with us?
Yep.
Okay. Excellent.
A few minutes labor, after parking the cart in the still waters of the Pacific, Carlotte stumbled into the nearest bar, already hungover from his yet unordered, disordered cocktail of the night before, or perhaps yet to come. The details came to him fuzzily, just as they would come to you if you scribbled them on the back of a cat-propelled Swiffer and then rubbed it against your face. I need a drink, Caflot said, and an aspirin, too. That doesn't sound like a very good idea, spake the bartender. I'm guessing you're a very heavy drinker, and the aspirin could give you a gastric bleed. Hey, mind your own business, he spat, missing the spittoon. Are you a bartender or a doctor? I'm paying my way through med school like this. Studying for the bar, eh? But Carlotte was an idiot, because the bar is for lawyers. The bartender was studying for the boards. Or maybe he was just disparaged for the pun. The bartender poured him a drink directly into a half-full bottle of aspirin that he kept behind the counter for just this sort of eventuality. It saddened him that people didn't give a shit about his medical advice, but he knew that you had to pick your bottles. If a man wants to drink himself to death with a side of aspirin, there ain't nothing you can do as a bartender to stop him. Not without going against your economic self-interest anyway, and this bartender was no cans, and he was a lackadaisical check. So what's so bad about today to make you want to slurp your way into an early rave? Oh, it's been a rough day, he answered roguishly. My secretary betrayed me, and I was kidnapped by those thugs, the bold Akis. And I forgot to mention my taillights busted on my beat black Buick, so I'll have to take it into the shop, but who has the time? Tell me about it, the bartender said, though he had no interest at all in the story. Eh, said Carlotte. I better keep my mouth shut and drink this whiskey sour through my nose. Hey, man. Whatever. 5 hours later, Carlotte decided to take public transportation home.
I'm sorry, that was a very good attempt, but we have to take the pubic transportation.
Pubic,
very good, well caught.
Yeah, you missed by a hair. Okay.
I think it's Popula's turn.
But that was excellent. Stay on the phone.
Oh, yeah, you're in this till the end now.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
We're all going down together.
You're stuck. Okay, you're with us.
All right. 5 hours later, Carlotte decided to take pubic transportation home, since he had somehow misplaced his car keys. Anyway, his car was at the docks, and the other one was in the ocean. So he stumbled onto the bus and said, "There's no place like home," with which the bus driver reluctantly agreed. So the bus driver drove him straight home, ignoring the angry catcalls from the other passengers. Carlotte thanked him profusely, since he knew that bus drivers have very high rates of heart attack. He still didn't have his keys, though, so when he reached his house, he had to punch through the window and climb in there to unlock the door. But he needn't have unlocked the door at all, because he was inside already. Carlotte sighed. It wasn't his best day. Chapter 2 When Carlotte awoke, his head bleeding internally, metaphorically speaking, there was an unopened telegram by his bed. Charlotte ripped it open and found the following massage. Have info regarding Baldici, Mr. Mind, semicolon, meet me at 6th and Bacon at 10 a.m. Stop TTYL. Dennis blanched at his watch. 9:48? Good Lord! He jumped out of bed, ricocheted into his boots, and hit the ground funning. He was going to be late. M-6th and Bacon was at least a half an hour away. He was unavoidably hungry, so he stopped for a leisurely 4-minute breakfast at his favorite roadside kiosk, a food truck that served Gruyere fondue. When he finally arrived at 6th and Bacon, it was 10:43, or as the Romans would have called it, X:VIIL. He arrived just after the ambulance and police car did. A man in a trench coat had been shot through the head with a sniper rifle, or so Carlotte surmised based on the ballistics and the man's horrified expression, which had a hole in it. Varlot smacked his own, mostly uninjured head and wailed, "I'm too late!" For here surely was the sender of the fateful telegraph. "Carlotte," said Detective Huggins. "What are you doing here, you G&T-chugging bath-tard?" "Investigating this murder, Hug, and doing a better job than you." "And who asked you to butt in here, Bloris?" "The victim, doofus." Detective Huggy clicked his tongue. "Shouldn't talk like that about the dead." "I wasn't calling the victim, doofus. I was..." "Oh, never mind," enthused Carlotte. "You're too dense to figure it out anyway." Huggy scowled and bent over by the deceased figure on the sidewalk.
Scrowled.
Oh, he did scrowl, now didn't he?
Yeah,
because why would he scowl like a normal person?
Exactly.
Can I just say that anybody who's not following along with the actual text of this is missing a lot of hilarity. Because the punctuation is an unbelievable mess.
Okay,
there are There are typos that are pronounceable but absurd, and so like anybody who is reading over them, I'm very impressed with.
And we should remind people that if you wish to enjoy the text along with us, the URL at which you can read this is nsdolkart.wordpress.com, and look for the link that says Bad Prose, and ye shall find it. Who is it, me?
Yes, I believe it's you.
Oh, okay. Where are we up to?
Give me Hoagie scrowled.
Hoagie scrowled and bent over by the deceased figure on the sidewalk. Looks pretty murdered, he said, but we can't rule out suicide. You're an idiot, Carla pointed out helpfully. The Vic doesn't have a gun. That makes him an idiot, said the detective Huggins. This is a dangerous, dangrenous town. I thought you didn't like people dumping on the dead. Higgins raised an eyebrow. I don't mind it personally, he chuckled, but I'd still arrest you for indecent exposure, public defecation, and creating a pubic nuisance.
I'm sorry, it's public defection this time.
Oh, my! I was reading too much into it! Cool.
Nobody can blame you, Jim.
Yeah, I totally assumed that would be defecation.
Yeah, yeah, well, it was...
I'm glad we have the author here to correct us.
The one time when it would make sense for it to be defecation.
Yes, next edition.
Who's next? Oh, am I after you, Jim?
That's all you.
Oh, boy.
Go
okay,
for
but
it,
I'd
author.
Still arrest you for...
You wrote it, exposure. You get to eat it.
Yeah, right.
For indecent exposure, public defection, and creating a pubic nuisance. You know what I meant, you jackass, screamed Carlotte. Touchy, 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 exhorted Det Huggins. Now we're in italics. If I don't get the hell out of this conversation, thought Carlotte, I'm going to have to start hurling my cookies at people. That's the end of me. Here comes Becky.
I have to read closely.
It's true.
That, moaned Huggins, is disgusting. He was poking the victim's eyeball with his finger. Flashback. The year was 1924. That is all. You should see a counselor for those flashbacks you've been having, suggested Detective Hugging. I'm sorry.
Okay, I think we need a stand-in. Who comes after Becky? Is it Danielle?
It might be.
Danielle comes after Becky.
Oh, goodness. Can I just say that the flashback, I mean, there are many favorite parts that I have of this, the flashback. The year was 1924, that is all. That is kind of amazing. Alright, excuse me while I try to compose myself for a second.
Composure break.
Decomposure, but...
It didn't work. Okay. Alright. You should see a counselor for those flashbacks you've been having, suggested Detective Hugging. It could be a serious condition or something. Thanks, Dr. Strangelove, Carrot husked sarcastically. Oh, karma, said Det hugely. You're such a dick. Well, copper, crooned Carlot, you do things your way, I'll do them mine. Holy begibbons, cried Carlot into his seventh beer. He was bilge drinking again. I've been growing about this all wrong. Huh? Said the bark eep. I've had a reevaluation, Carlog shooted.
Okay,
that was a good attempt. Goodness.
I'm that so was well bad done. At this.
But we're deeper into the mire. Oh, Lister, do you want to get involved in this? I don't know if you want to get involved in this.
I think
we're going to be nice to Lister and let him just listen instead of Lister.
Oh, goodness.
I will say, Danielle skipped over my chapter heading. Chapter 2 continued.
Oh, shoot, I did. You should have called me on that.
I thought it was...
Sorry, chapter 2, continued. Holy begibbons. That's where... Actually, it happened right after. You do your things your way, I'll do them mine. Chapter 2, parentheses continued. Holy begibbons. And now we're caught up.
Okay. And it's... Is it John's turn?
It is time for our caller.
The caller.
Oh, I'm sorry. Let me bring up your pot. There you are.
Holy begibbons, cried Carlot into his seventh beer. He was bilge drinking again. I have been growing about this all wrong. Huh? Said the barkeep. I've had a reevaluation, Harlog shooted. I have to go interview some witnesses. It's 12:15, quoth the fellow who is tending bar. Shouldn't you wait until tomorrow? And tomorrow, Boris retorted. I can't creep at that petty pace from day to day. Hey! Slurred another customer. Isn't that from Macbeth? A ladder fell on him, and he died. And that's why we call it the Scottish Play, whispered an actor. Carlot waddled down the alley toward his destination, humming the ABC song to himself in a vain attempt to keep sober. It was not working. He soon found himself face down in the alley. A cop had pulled him over. Stay down! They're trailing you. I'm pissed, Boris confessed. Shh! Detective Hogan quietly blared.
Was pretty good. That sounded like detective and not delective.
Well done.
I missed that myself.
I didn't catch that one.
Dun, yeah.
Dun, dun.
Okay.
We have excellent delectives here as our studio audience.
Delectable ones. Okay, so stay on the phone, and we will continue our rounds, our appointed rounds.
I think it's Havala next.
All right.
Yes.
Shh. Delective Hogan quietly blared. It was go nude. A group of Baladachi thugs was headed their way.
Baladachi.
Baladachi.
Baladachi. Yeah, okay.
A croup, also.
Yeah, okay, that was a toughie. That was a toughie.
Man.
But I think we need to call you on.
Oh, yes, no, I admit when I am beat, and that beat me very well.
Yes.
You did well with the go nude, though.
Yeah, that would have gotten me.
Go nude and go nude are slightly...
But it's pronounced, it's spelled the same, so.
Yeah, exactly. It's very good that you pointed that out. But I guess it's me.
I think so.
It was go nud. A group of Baladachi thugs was headed their way. We could fight, Bornis suggested bravely, putting on his thinking cap. Within seconds, the thugs came trotting around the corner, guns flashing in the light of the new moon. The two detectives charmed them like a pair of bulls, knocking the guns aside and throwing knees into their crotches. All four Baldacci henchmen collapsed onto the round, moaning and writhing in pain. So much for the law of small numbers, slurped Carlot. He bent to collect the gums, but tipped over and fell on his head. Detective Marty Huggins was nimbler. He snatched up all fire forearms and threw them in a dumpster where they all went off with a mighty kabloom. Bullets whizzed about the alley, plinking against walls and tearing through clotheslines. There were a lot of clotheslines in alleys back then. The nutcracked baddies tried to pull themselves together and stand up, but Carlot stood on their heads. Ow! They said in unison. It's okay, Carlot, the other man said, aiming his revolver at the prone moaners. We're safe now. Will done. All the way home, Craylot thought about writhing a will so that he could make sure his asses were divided among his relatives the way he wanted them to be. After all, it wouldn't be fair for it all to go to his nest of gin. As soon as he was sane in bed, he pulled out a yellow notepad and wrote, my last willing testament. But he couldn't think of anything else to say, so he put a bullet through his leg and went to sleep. chapter. Note to self, figure out what chapter this is. A few days later, Catlock woke up. He had woken up the previous days, too, but it didn't bear mentioning. He was, however, extremely confused as to his location. He was at home. Could have sworn I fell asleep at the barn last night, he murmured sheepishly to himself.
Sorry, I'm sheeplessly.
Sheeplessly. I should have rammed that one home. Oh, dear. Well, what can you say?
No.
Thank you, thank you, thank you. We'll be here for another 40 minutes. Okay.
Okay, so could have sworn I fell asleep at the barn last night, he murmured sheepishly to himself. How did I get home, and who put me in my pajamas? I did, said a hussy voice from behind her. Carlotte spun around. Oh, that's me. Come on over, Becky.
All right, where are we here?
Carlotte
spun around twice or three times before his eyes fixed themselves upon the visage of Fred Lean. Fred Lean, he yelped handsomely.
WTF,
we're on the radio here.
WTF. Now hold your hearses, baby, she cooed. I'm on your slide. But how, he queried. I don't understand. There's no time to explain, she explained. We have to move, and move quick. We escaped the Baldacci's last time, but now they're riding our tails. Hit the gas! Carlotte followed her advice, and zoom, they were zooming down the street, leaving only skid marks and broken speed limits in their wake. But sure enough, they were being followed by the same...
Sorry, they were being followed.
No!
Okay.
Danielle, but sure enough, they were being followed.
Okay. Okay. But sure enough, they were being followed by the same pitch-white van as before. Buckle up, baby, Boris babbled. It's gonna be a burpee ride. He spun the wheel like a Pied Potter, and the car leapt nimbly into the air, pirouetting into an alley before jerping left into another darker alley. Have we lost them? Fred Lean asped. I ain't taking no chances, sugar beet, Carlotte rasped suavely. Let's pull this...
I think that was the end of you, Danielle.
Okay, and I think it's time for our caller to take another whack at pulling into the car wask.
I ain't taking no chances, sugar beet, Carlotte rasped suavely. Let's pull into this car wask. While the car was being smashed, Boris and his secretary quickly swapped clothes in the back seat so that no one could recognize them, driving off in a Buick that would look totally different when clean. Give her a new painting job while you're at it, Carlotte Fred Lean said, throwing the car wash guys a gangrenous tip. When the car was unidentifunctional, they sped off toward Lower Manhattan, which was just the name of a bar since they were still in California. It turned out to be a treble choice, but they had no way of knowing that until it all happened. For there was great evil afoot in the bar. There always is. To be continued. Right now! Fred Lean guzzled her martini with grace and panache, gargling the vermouth seductively. Carlotte was less classy, slurping down a double shot of grenadine, before tottering off to the bathroom. He never got there. That's not to say he never set foot in the bathroom ever again just so they didn't make this particular one, because he was so drunk on the grenadine that he chose the wrong door and stepped into the back alley instead. But he was lucky he did, because what did he see out there? He saw none other than Jack Baldacci messing with an exposed pipe, trying to inject poison into the bar's emergency sprinkler system. The big green jug didn't actually say poison on it, but Jack's intentions were obvious. He immediately deduced that Ack planned to throw a Molotov cocktail into the bar, drenching all the patrons with poison, including him and Fred Lean. Hey, he said drunkenly, even slobberingly. I know what you're doing. Cut it out. Carlotte meant to say cut it out, but Jack Baldacci had thrown the bottle of poison at him, and it stuck him, struck him right in the temple before falling into the ground and hattering into mithrines. Now his nemesis cracked his knuckles.
Sorry, his nemesis. Or his mimesis, perhaps.
Would that be your nemesis who does a lot of memes?
I think it would have to be.
Okay, right. Who's next?
Let's think do it's Havala. This.
Yes.
Now his mimesis cracked his knuckles and grinned with his prosthetic mouth, looking like the George Foreman of the apocalypse. Make me, he said. Ew, Carlotte blubbered. Don't tell me you're my son? Wow, Jack said. You're even drunker than I think you are. I think. You are! You're more smashed than that bottle I threw at you. Oh, yeah? Carlotte blubbered again until I can think of a better word. I'm not eerily nas drunk as thou, yink. And he lurched toward him. But Jack must have been right, because Carlotte easily dodged Carlotte's flailing arms and punched the private dick right in the head, sending him flopping to the concrete. Oof, Carlotte complained. Heh, Jack head. That was pathetic. What a weak attempt at paunching me. Ow, Carlotte went on, continuing his earlier grumbles and complaints. You're apathetic, little man, Jank smirped. Your reputation is way overblown. He considered kicking Carlotte in the face, but our hero was too clever. He slipped one of those long toothpicks for skewering martini olives out of his teeth, and as Jack was about to commit the deed, he shanked his cankle. Holy fudge! Jack screamed, because he was minding his language. Carlotte easily flipped him onto his back, yanked out his weapon, and went for the throat. But Jack caught the skewer and snapped it tween his fingers, thereby disarming his no longer armed opponent. But Claret wasn't fazed. He just headbutted Jack's face with his own face, and they both collapsed moaning and clutching their noses.
Jack was that clutching or clunching?
Oh, that was clutching, and it should have been clunging.
That was brilliant.
It's like a minefield in this text.
Okay, what's my cue?
I guess you can go back to the beginning of the sentence, but Claret wasn't fazed.
Okay, help me a little, because
last
believe it or not, I was...
third line from the bottom.
Yeah, I'm looking at a scroll, so I don't know from lines from the bottom.
Paragraph begins with holy fudge.
That's correct.
Ah, okay, holy fudge. Let's see if I can find... Yeah, I may have to do a search on fudge.
You could just look for Claret.
That's true.
Oh, fudge will work as well. Ah, there we are. Holy fudge, Jack screamed because he was minding his language. Carlotte easily flipped him onto his back, yanked out his weapon, and went for the throat. But Jack caught the skewer and snapped it between his fingers, thereby disarming his no longer armed opponent. But Claret wasn't fazed. He just headbutted Jack's face with his own face, and they both collapsed, moaning and clenching their noses. Jack was the first to recover, and he reached for the Uzi in his belt, but before he could pull the trigger, a flying martini glass caught him in the jaw, and he passed right out of there. Carlotta could have wept with joy, and probably did. Friendline, he cried, you saved me! Yeah, maybe, Friendline grimaced, but I'm going to have to pay to replace that hat martini glass. It's on me, Carlotta said. But actually, it was all in little pieces that were mostly on Jack Baldacci. I'm not a fool, lover boy, Fredlian smorked. I never trust a drunk to remember what he said he'd pay for the night before the next day. That was too confusing for Carlock to parse in his current state. Californian, also really drunk. So he just nodded and looked knowing. Take me home, he pleaded. Nah. Fredline nad. They're probably casing the joint. Besides, I got a clue from the bartender about a place we should investigate in regards to your murderer. Boris gasped. I'm dead? How long have you known? You're not dead, Feline snapped, but you're sure as hell not sober. I mean, the murderer you were investigating, the one who shot the guy.
No, it's investigating again.
Oops.
There. But it's good we found some consistency.
Okay, yes, indeed.
Okay. So you're not dead, Feline snapped, but you're sure as hell not sober. I meant the murderer you were investigating. The one who shot that guy in the face? Oh, him, Carlost said. Yeah, I guess I should find out who did that. Okay, go on over, Beck.
And you did it without even a word in there to catch on.
Okay. No, there was a word there.
Oh, it's minuets up. That I was about minuets. To say.
Yes.
All right. Three minuets later, they were parked outside of the Den of Depravity, into which they would soon enter, presumably after unbuckling their seatbelts. This is supposed to be a gritty story, so they probably killed Jack Baldacci before they left. Or did they? If it's off-camera, it didn't happen, and there are no cameras here because it's a novel. Well, said Fred, this is the place. I'm going in, baby, Carlotta announced. If I don't come back in 3 days, call Detective Huggins and tell him I love his wife. Fred Lean frowned.
Okay, I think that's Danielle's turn.
I think so, yes.
Okay. Fred Lean frowned. First off, I'm coming with you. Second, 3 days is way too long. Fourthly, I don't know this Huggy character, and thirdly, he's single. Whatever, said Carlox. It was a good line. Chapter 7, The Den of Depravity. Carlotte and Fred Lean stand at the door, awaiting a response to their many knocks. The people inside must be two stones to hear them, so they carefully open the door and tiptoe inside. The first thing that struck them was the sour smell of burning acid. People were passing joints of it back and forth, smiling weird smiles and puffing hallucinogenic smoke. Catfrock walked. That's not fair.
Alrighty, let's to the phone.
Oh, no.
People were passing joints of it back and forth, smiling weird smiles and puffing hallucinogenic smoke. Catfrock walked past alarmingly skimpy men, smoking bowls of heroin or dropping hashish, shooting up LSD, and eating crack brownies. Fred Lean did too, because she was also there. At last, they came to the man they were looking for, a man so stringed out he looked like a casualty of the Opium Wars, except without all the British colonialism and such. I hear you know something about that guy who died, Carlot specified. I do, said the man, and I can tell you which Baldacci thug shot him, too. That's amazing, Fred Lean gurgled. Who was it? The addict frowned. I was about to tell you, don't interrupt me. We haven't got all day, Carslot claimed, even though he had nothing else on his calendar. I said, don't interrupt me, the man shouted. If anyone interrupts me again, I swear to God, I'm going to be continued. This time for reals.
Woo!
Wow. I hope you're proud of yourself, Noah.
Congratulations, caller. You took us home with that one.
I think we need to declare a winner here.
I vote the caller.
Yeah, that was caller, magnificent.
Yeah.
That was really great. I'm sorry, your name again?
John,
thank you so much, John. That was tops. That was really tops.
I had a ball. I've been listening to stories for 3 decades on this show. I never got to read.
You've certainly passed the test now. I prefer not to have callers read on the air because, of course, the sound quality, which is why we have Noah on Skype. But you've been listening for how long?
Well, 29 if you want to get technical.
Okay, so no wonder your brain is burned. So
it's a wonder you can speak at all.
Not continuously. I've been doing other things in between.
Oh, that's good. I'm so pleased to hear that. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
We're going to move along here, and you are magnificent.
So, Noah, is this what we can expect your next book to be like?
Oh, yes. It's pretty terrible. No, it's truly excellent. You must believe me. Please.
I say, it takes a lot of talent to be able to write something that terrible.
Yeah, you have to say in a Gene Wilder voice, we must.
I learned from the best.
Yeah, I don't know why that's a Gene Wilder thing. Yeah, it's Blazing Saddles.
Oh.
Yeah. Yes. Gene Wilder does that line at some point.
I did my best to catch the reader off guard as often as possible.
Yes, it really I found a major advantage to my limited success there by not reading ahead.
Yes, that can do it.
I had to not think about what I was saying at all to make any headway, and you saw how well that worked for me.
Yeah, I was doing a little reading ahead so I could try to come up with voices, which is when I got cocksure, and just lost it at that point. But normally, when I'm reading on the air, I'm reading to myself usually about a paragraph ahead of what my mouth is doing. I talk that way the other way. Usually my mind is about a paragraph behind whatever my mouth is doing. But in this case, I tried to synchronize the word to the mouth, and that was the only way I could get through even one line of that wonderful material.
Well, I think that's why I might be... Well, no, I was going to say that might be why I'm so particularly bad, or at least why having written it is no advantage. But, of course, the other thing is that when I'm writing it, I'm going to write the things that I find the funniest and most ridiculous, so... I'm going to catch myself now and then.
Yeah, so you're a pre-set audience, as it were.
Yes, I'm also the kind of writer who writes very clean prose. So, like, my first drafts are all readable.
Can
you know? I don't you know just sort of throw out the words and then come back to it later. And so even the smallest little punctuation things will trip me up, which is why I went and like put the wrong things in quotation marks and that sort of thing.
Yeah, and Danielle is a very proud first reader, by the way. She's read among the best. She's first read among the best, is all I will say. And We will assure people that were you to read Silent Hall or the forthcoming Among the Fallen or come to Blue Stockings Bookstore.
Very good. On April 13th at 7 p.m.
At 7 p.m., which is, by the way, a magnificently bizarre and wonderful proper New York progressive. It's more than a bookshop. It's an experience.
Oh,
there we go. It really is. We enjoin people to enjoin Noah on not Friday, April 13th at Blue Stockings Books. Anybody here remember the address? I know how to go there without knowing the address. I can look.
Oh, I can look it up. Hold on a minute.
Yeah, it's
draw.
Is it Allen Street?
Can't remember.
Yeah, there's some really good kanji restaurants right near there. I don't have to say their name because there's more than one.
Yes, you're correct. It's 172 Allen Street.
172 Allen Street. Very good. At about 7 p.m.
Yes, indeed. So, that is the plan.
So people should show up at 6, because I will not stand still for people who order lattes in the middle of a reading. This is my... I used to try to record readings at Blue Stockings, okay? This is a wonderful place. They have very good caffeinated products and things like that. And somebody gets up to read, and somebody else who came in, not, you know, possibly, God forbid, in order to buy a book or a magazine or even to have a beverage, comes in and orders a latte or a cappuccino, and in the middle of the reading, get and it's like, oh no, there goes my recording.
Yeah.
I'm totally selfish about this kind of stuff.
They really needed that latte, Jim.
Yeah, well, you know, iced coffee has a latte to be said for it.
Uh-huh.
Look what you've done to me, Noah. You.
This wasn't Noah's fault.
Yes, it.
Oh, yeah. Don't blame me.
No, he. Okay. The mind was there. Okay, but it took. it took the latent.
You've been primed for really bad puns. Is that what you're trying to say?
It doesn't take a lot.
No,
well, puns are kind of like zombie bites. Like, you just get bit with one and it starts to infect you.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. And then you just want to eat your own brain. After that. It's that kind of a zombie bite. Tell us
a
little...
It's a very interesting visual.
Yeah, I guess so. Tell us a little bit about Silent Hall and the sequel.
Oh, gladly. Well, Silent Hall has become a little more timely than I meant it to be, perhaps.
Yeah, I was gonna say.
Because it's about five refugees who aren't white, wandering around in a mostly white continent that doesn't like them very much, and that is afraid, perhaps, of what dreadful curses they might bring with them.
Who says that science fiction isn't prescient?
Yeah,
even when it's fantasy. But
it's a character focused epic fantasy, and I do a lot of talking about. I do a lot of work with theology in there, because the gods are very active and they'll stomp on you if you do the wrong thing, but they won't necessarily tell you in advance what the wrong thing is. So theology is a cutting-edge field, and the characters need to navigate both the world and the pantheon in order to survive. And they spend much of Silent Hall just trying to survive. And whereas Among the Fallen is...
I'd say the title sort of tells you where things are going.
Yeah. And I'm very pleased that Among the Fallen is book two in a three-book trilogy.
Ooh.
A three-book trilogy?
As opposed to...
Yes, indeed.
Yeah, one of those.
Or those four-book trilogies.
Improperly named
five-book trilogies.
Indeed. Zelazny wrote two five-book trilogies.
Douglas Adams.
I was thinking, yeah.
Well, yeah, him too.
Well, and whatever Song of Ice and Fire is turning into, I think that also started as a trilogy.
A nice, tight seven-book trilogy.
Yeah.
Yes.
Exactly. The best kind of trilogy.
On the other hand, there's a rather depressing number of two-book trilogies out there. So,
yeah, and that's got, unfortunately, that has little to do with the authors.
I know it.
They get,
and that is why I am so pleased that this is a three-book trilogy.
So you're contracted?
Yes, indeed.
You've contracted something?
I've contracted something, and I am unlikely to recover until next... August or so.
Is that your deadline, or that the pub date?
That is the tentative pub date.
Ooh, okay, so we know when you're next on the show. February. If not earlier, yeah.
This is something I love about Angry Robot as a publisher, is that their publication schedules are fairly aggressive. I have colleagues, I suppose I'll call them, who got their first contracts before I did, and are only being published now.
Yeah.
And some who had their books, you know, two and three spaced widely apart, or three and four spaced very widely apart. And that is unlikely to happen with Angry Robot unless I mess up somehow. And that's a nice thing to know.
Yeah, there are people who find at certain publishers that they will have sold the trilogy of their dreams. Book two has just been published, and the editor has left for greener pastures, only to find that the editor cannot rebuy the book at their new publisher,
right.
And the old publisher, the author is orphaned.
Yeah.
And the book is just left, you know, swaying in the wind. It doesn't even have a chance to be pulped.
Yes. Well, I'm also pretty...
And that's, by the way, because of three-year lead times.
Yeah.
Which is when you turn the book in to when they finally start typesetting it.
Yes, indeed. It is less so at Angry Robot. They turn things around nice and fast. And I actually had, I worked with an interim editor because their regular editor who edited Silent Hall, Phil Jourdan, was off on some sort of a sabbatical for 6 months. And But I worked with another man named Paul Simpson, I want to say, who had some very worthwhile things to say, and so I was pleased to work with him too, and they still kept up their end of the bargain.
Excellent. I'm so very pleased to hear it, and couldn't have happened to a better person.
Thank you.
As I was saying, bad things can happen also to good people, but I'm very pleased that this has worked out well for you. And I'm pleased to hear these things about Angry Robot. I get them confused with Bad Robot, which is a...
Yes, a lot of people do.
Yeah.
On the other hand, I'm not sure whether that's a bad thing or a good thing, because on the one hand, people go, oh, wow, J.J. Abrams' company?
Yeah, right. Well, and actually, if you think about it and the kind of stuff that Abrams does, why shouldn't he be involved in publishing?
He should. Well, yeah. If Angry Robot ever gets orphaned again, maybe he'll buy them.
Yeah, who knows? Yeah, he could do that with the residuals off of a quarter of one of his bad movies, of which there are some, all TV shows anyway. Felicity, anybody? Come on!
Hey, if it wasn't for Felicity, we never would have gotten Carrie Russell, and we wouldn't have the Americans now, so...
Ooh, that's fair.
No, good actors and actresses. I used to work for a talent agency. They will surface, often. Yeah, or they'll end up doing showcases forever, but...
I think that perhaps, Jim, you might not have been the audience for Felicity.
I watched Felicity, especially in its final season, because he did some genius stuff, actually, after the show was canceled. For those who are unaware what he did with Felicity, he had no budget. So he went back to the earlier episodes, and he had Carrie Russell visiting herself in those early episodes, which is a clever trick that's been done once or twice. And he saved so much money. Some of the best episodes were written after it was canceled. And he made the movie screenplay of Buffy really sucked. And then that author created it into a TV show, and he did it very well. So I'll give everybody a gimme. But Felicity had issues. And it went, what, four seasons?
You're asking me like I've ever watched Felicity.
Oh, and you're blaming me.
I'm just saying
for not being
that
the audience. I've seen more of it than you.
You have. I do think
not
that...
Not the target audience.
Yeah,
she was
targeted
and she escaped.
Okay, third season of Alias.
Was that when it went off the rails?
Yeah, after they did 2 years later, and they never explained what happened in those 2 years.
Yeah, no, it, that... I have opinions.
Yeah. That's when it lost my partner and I. We both went like, okay, we'll stick with it because you knew there had to be eventual flashback.
Wasn't that when he had left the show to do something else?
I mean, if he did for a little, I don't know, because one season came after another season right on time. There was no lapse to the viewer.
So my experience with... I'm probably completely wrong about this, but my experience with J.J. Abrams shows is that he will do it for a while and it's awesome, and then he leaves for another project.
Then it
goes to hell. Like, the previous project goes to hell when he leaves. And so that's actually why I started watching Lost. I was really excited about Lost, and then I realized that J.J. Abrams was the one doing it, and I was like, you know what? I'm going to stop watching this. I'm going to wait until the series is complete to know whether he's going to do to Lost what he did to Alias, and I am not going to invest my emotions in this.
That was a smart move.
It was a smart move.
It was.
So J.J. Abrams, if you're out there listening... just stick with something for a while.
Try commitment. You know what?
He's done some good stuff, though.
I'm actually perfectly good with his doing one-offs.
Yeah, I have no problem with that.
I have no problem with it because he brought back Star Wars from the horrible morass it was in. He was not terribly original about it. He tread... the material that we loved, and he brought it back from a place where its originator had brought it into bad depths. He also revitalized Star Trek.
He did some very interesting things with Star Wars. Like, my opinion is that he walked the most interesting line that a writer ever would have to walk, because not only was he supposed to reboot one of the most loved franchises, he had to suck in the older... he had to do fan service to the older audience. He had to suck in a brand new audience. He had to introduce an entirely new raft of characters while ushering off the old characters gracefully off stage. And, you know, in the meantime, also tell a story and be true to the previous in the meantime. It was very, I think, you know, say what you want about it, I think it was a very impressive piece of writing.
I agree with it. I thought that Rogue One was better, but I think that without J.J. Abrams having done what he did, I don't think that Rogue One would have had the legs to stand on. I think that he gave the franchise new legs, if you'll pardon the expression, a new hope.
And, oh, Jim.
Hey, I'm not a big, big fanboy, but I saw Star Wars, never a movie called A New Hope, a movie only called Star Wars, over 30 times on the screen. It's the only time I ever went that gaga over a film. It helped that they were running it 24/7 at the Loews Astor Plaza, and that was within walking distance of the radio station.
Well, I'm a Star Trek girl myself, but
I'm a Trek. Okay, so for the big argument.
Ooh.
Best Trek.
Deep Space Nine.
Yes. Okay. Thank you.
Hold on a minute.
Okay, Noah.
From the comfort of my own home. Seeing as there are no rabid Trekkies around
to pull me.
I know exactly where you live, Noah. I know where you live.
It's true. You should come and visit sometime, even if you do it with a knife, in order to go after me for the Star Trek thing. I found Deep Space Nine entirely unwatchable. And it wasn't because of their writing or their plotting, which I'm sure was excellent. It was because of the acting.
I have to caution you all here that Renee Auberjonois is a staff member, on and off staff member at WBAI, with whom I have performed. So watch your mouths.
And a GD genius.
Can you tell him I love him?
I possibly could do that. Barbara and I will have to tell you the story of how we first met.
I think I've heard that story, actually.
Yeah, you probably did, because it's a really cool story.
And I'm a big fan of his.
Yeah, as am I, but my fandom of his goes back to his early Robert Altman films like McCabe and Mrs. Miller.
Well, then you're clearly superior, Jim.
Yeah. Oh, he did a lot of Altman films and a lot of good movies. IMDb him, folks. Having said that, it's next gen.
No.
Agreed.
No, yeah, absolutely.
Unfortunately, you're wrong.
That is definitely the best series that isn't Deep Space Nine.
Yes.
You know what? I like Deep Space Nine a lot until they got the Defiant.
Oh, that's when it got good.
That's when it went off the rails.
No. Are you telling me that you
This is another show we're setting up, gang.
Uh-oh.
Hey, if I'd been able to watch, say, three or four episodes of Deep Space Nine without giving up, then I would probably have some part in this argument.
Wait, did you start with the first season and only watch a couple of episodes?
Yes, and everybody says that's not the way to do things, and I understand that.
The pilot sucked.
Yeah, no, the entire first season sucked.
And I'll say...
And the pilot of TNG sucked as well. No, Journey to Far Side?
It did, but I still watched it and didn't want to
So I will defend the Deep Space Nine fans by saying that the DS9 pilot sucked, but Next Generation pilot may have sucked even more, and I'm a Next Gen fan, so...
I will concede that the first season of Deep Space Nine... taken by itself was awful, but what it did was it set groundwork for some of the best storytelling in that universe.
Casablanca in space.
Trouble is, though, that because they were doing this amazing storytelling thing of long arcs and whatnot, I have never felt that I could just skip the first season and move on to other things.
Yeah,
unlike Next Gen, which I grew up with the reruns already, I watched them all out of order, and they were all awesome, and I only saw the dreadful pilot basically as an adult. With Deep Space Nine, I was like, okay, I'd better start watching this, and I know there's all this like long arc, like cool storytelling being done. But then, obviously, I get stuck with the first season.
Okay.
And if I'd been stuck watching the entire first season of Next Gen all the way through in sequential order,
I think we can all agree with one basic thing. Enterprise sucked.
I've heard people who liked Enterprise a lot, actually. I've actually never seen it myself, but I know people... Well, actually, the one thing that I do know about Enterprise is they did some amazing stuff with the costuming, because from what I saw, they split the difference between like Air Force jumpsuits and like the Star Trek like jumpsuits that were to come, and they hit it right in the middle of that.
Okay, you know what?
I didn't like the aesthetic though, and I didn't like.
Do you know how much time there is left to our show?
No,
10 seconds. I'm not exaggerating.
Goodbye, world.
One.
We love you.
However, having said that, oops. Wow. Why did my intro start instead of my outro? Lister is wonderful and a doll, and he doesn't expect us to be totally out of here exactly then. But I like being relatively on time, and we can talk during my outro music. So
he's a wonderful man, and I appreciate his compliments on my cannibalism story from last time around.
Right! I'd forgotten that. He remembered that's right.
Lister was also very nice about my stuff, too.
That's right. Yes, he was.
And he smiled very nicely at me the first time we met, which was 5 seconds ago.
Everybody loves Lister. All my guests. Rick Bowes, he comes here just to see Lister. It's absolutely true. Nora. I'll tell you off the air, but anyway.
No fair. I don't get this.
I'll tell you later.
Okay, yeah, we'll tell you later. At any rate, Noah.
Yeah.
Silent Hall Among the Fallen, both out from Angry Robot Books, both in print, available at Blue Stockings on April 13th. Everybody should be there, and you'll be ready for a new event because we've got one on April 1st at 388 Atlantic Avenue, the 75th birthday of Samuel R. Delaney. I expect you all to show up. And even if you stay at home and watch it on live stream, raise a glass and have a toast to one of the greats in the field.
Raise a glass also to our readers, who are excellent.
Absolutely, especially our caller, but also to
Danielle Friedman
and
Havala McGinnis.
And I'm Jim Freund. I will be we should mention N.S. Dolkart is the pen name, D-O-L-K-A-R-T, and I'll be back next week from 1 to 3 a.m. is my current time slot, and I don't remember what I'm doing next week. Let's all tune in together to find out, shall we? Thank you all for listening. You can visit the Hour of the Wolf Facebook group. You can visit me on my Way Dead website at ourwolf.com or on Facebook. And thank you all for listening, and thank you all for being here. Everybody,
thank you for having us.
Thank you, Noah. We'll do it again soon. And I hope to see you in a couple of weeks.
I hope so.
Okay. Take care.
Bye.
And, whoops, wrong pot. There we go. I actually had worked that out properly. Lister, you can come over and cue stuff up, or else we're going to have dead air. We do not want dead air. Lister has taken off his shirt so he can get hugs. It's his preferred method. Wait till I stand up before you accost me, you accoster. And my theme is over now. What can I say other than cue something up? I have to log out of Skype or else everybody in this bleeping radio station is going to use my account. And there's no accounting for that. Look what he has done. Look what Noah has done. Oh, it's up there. Yeah, let it play. Let it play. Let it play.
Okay, here we go.
There we go. Good morning, everybody. Stay tuned for Burn, Baby, Burn. Clappers.
Trying to reach my freedom of speech and expressing myself, torching the symbol. No repression, let that be a lesson to those that want suppression of the truth. Put on hold, the bold lose control, so they force obedience. Have you pledge allegiance to a piece of cloth? That's all the way I see it. Well, I'm going off berserk, cause the system work to jerk. My people, the people, all around the pigs work. Tell me I'm wrong, though, that's my right in this writing. The Constitution, yo, that's an illusion. Huh, suckers trying to change and rearrange. They say that I'm free, but they still have a strange way of showing it. But I'm blowing the cover, the red, white, the blue, but the black for the brother. And I'm no lover of this flag, like many others take the same turn. Like me, they yearn for the flag too. Burn the material of the imperialist in a blazing inferno. Cause my hurt is internal, the American dream, a nightmare. To wake up to the lies, the bitch make up imperialistic swans that I grind into bacon bits. Call the fist, cause I ain't taking shit. I'm not a Nazi or a Cappy or a Farmy, but you want me in prison? Cause I'm pissing your tag with the flag. I rag it and snag it and drag it and rip it to shreds. Cause I'm too black, too strong, too red, too dread. And I'm dreaded cause I make the pigs tremble when I burn a symbol. Yo, I'm quick and nimble like Jack, but I'm a black man attacking the flag. I keep my torch handy, I'm no Yankee Doodle Dandy. So just hand me a flag from the fastest and watch me burn that piece up to ashes. Cause the real meaning is what the masses must learn. That's why the red, white, and blue must burn, baby, burn. Burn, baby, burn. Thank you.
find the people who hate this shit. These are the places we'll hit.
Number one, Panama, talking about Peru, Azania, Brixton, Belfast, can't forget Korea, Beirut, can't forget Haiti, Iran, Puerto Rico, Colombia, Mexico, talk about Uptown, Harlem, New York City, y'all, and Nicaragua, East and South Central LA, California, IA, Miami, do or die, Bed-Stuy, never ran, never will, Brownsville, boogie down, South Bronx, yeah. My man Joey to jail, and now they got him in court because he burned the flag. That's the name of the game. Well, I quit playing. I doubt the suckers want you to hear what I'm saying about this nation. Freedom supposed to be the format, but I step on your flag like it's a floor mat. Maim and mangle, the star spangled. I'm not trying to diss you. I use the flag like toilet tissue to wipe my black ass. What? You think that I'm a jackass? I see a flag and I attack fast with some fire. My desire to burn what Betty Ross sold up. The truth I show up about America, America, home of the brave. The free, boom, this is the home of the slave. Now hold on just a mother minute. You gave me freedom of speech in the First Amendment. So why the wanna scold me when I touch the flag? I'm only doing what you told me. You don't like it, so what? I'm not scared of you. Your flag, America too. See, I made up this new rule and I want y'all to learn it. Strike a match to the American flag and burn it.
Single list alive right here, Burn Baby Burn, Jim Fry, one of your best shows ever. Great show. Jim will be back same place, same time, 1 o'clock sharp until 3 o'clock before we burn Imperialist, red, white, and blue flag to ashes. Right here at your favorite radio station. I love your two guests, wonderful guests, great reading. Hey, this is why we call it 99 Single List Alive. WBAI. Pacific Radio at its very best. Alright, let's dance in the news. Let's go.
No bother with it. No bother with you fussing and you fighting. Fighting, no, no.
But if only we could find a way to say the right things all of the time. Then you and I could see it through the blue, the heart of the perilous time. I'm saying that if all of us unite, we could live a happy life. No more suffering for men, if only our love. Sing and you fight. Don't bother with it. Don't bother with you for singing your fighting.
Together in any weather.